Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know like,
nothing
like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull off the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richer. And I don't believe in time.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, and it's a wild and woolly night here in Place to Be Nation, Scott. A lot of upheaval, a lot of politics going on in your life.
You know, even when you're dealing with Catholic fraternal organizations and you know, things we do for the good, for instance, we donated money tonight. First of all, JR, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always. It's fine Wednesday evening, but...
I get you fired up out of the gate.
You know, we're donating money to a church and a council in Moore, Oklahoma. So that need the help.
I like how you qualify though by saying, even though it's a group of Catholic whatever, to me that leads itself to the obvious that there probably are a lot of issues.
Well, it doesn't matter. You know what the Masons probably have their own issues, and the Lions Club and the Kiwanis and all these other groups, but.
I have problems playing basketball with five other people,
yeah,
so I can't even imagine this.
There's politics in the West Warwick arsonists.
Yes, there are.
So, but no, I'm fired up and I'm ready to go. But JR, it's always a pleasure. And PTB Nation, welcome to episode 224 of the Place to Be Podcast. We got a fun one tonight. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. One of the more popular vaults that we are looking forward to. So,
Hey, what is going on here?
Coming up to the end of the year, Chubby, are you going to be sitting in there all summer too? A little stuffy in here. Because tonight,
well, he'll probably be hiding in there for the millennium, you know? It's coming soon.
Yes, that is true. Because tonight, inside the squared, it's going to be very cerebral. More like, shall we say, an out-of-body experience.
In the main event at WrestleMania, in somewhat of a guest yet referee capacity, Iron Mike referee Tyson.
Title from the Rattlesnake. I am the only
I feel like kicking your ass. I will.
It's my way or the highway. Those are the rules. Live with it.
If you're chasing the body, picture my face. Wham, wham, you get the stunner just like anybody else.
It's the body rules. It's my rules or the highway.
It's the body rules, it's my rules, or the highway. That was the big catchphrase of all the freaking video packages leading up to the show where that phrase was said. I remember Jim and myself just repeating that over and over that night because they must have played that clip a million times.
Yes, and we'll be used to that over the next 2 years of songs, phrases, and getting beaten into your head. Tonight, Inside the Vintage Vault on episode 224 of the Place to Be podcast, SummerSlam 1999. Hearing that voice, JR, the voice of the body, always brings a twinkle to my eye because that means for the first time in 9 years, over 9 years, the body has returned.
A few weeks shy. Well, as we saw, his last taping was like late July. So
yeah, so
just about
but for the first time in over 9 years on pay-per-view, yes. He returns, Jesse the Body. And we'll tell you, of course, how and why later on because, you know, JR, as you and I were just looking over this this show. This is the first – not the first. We've had a lot of them since the Attitude Era has started, but this is the first one where the main event is very, very convoluted, long. It's a lot of discussions, but we have a full show. We got some gems in the undercard, some in the undercard, but this will be fun.
Yep.
A show – we've been looking forward to for a while. Are you ready?
Oh, I am ready.
August 22nd, 1999. Live from the brand spanking new Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Our debut in the state of Lakes. Of course, the home of the governor at the time. JR, a little history. Brief, if you will, of the Target Center.
It actually was not brand new, Scott.
Well, brand new for pay-per-view, but yes.
Okay, I said open in 1990.
Well, yeah, brand new for pay-per-view, but yes, you're right.
Okay,
open really? That old?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't even think it was that old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Open October 13th, 1990, renovated in 2004. Home, of course, of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Pretty much since they started in 1990, they went right there, and what, they started like 88?
Yep. They played some games at the Metrodome, I think, actually, and then...
Actually, they're founded in 89, so it looks like they had maybe one season... before they launched.
Yeah.
They debuted on November 3rd, 89, losing to the Sonics, 106-94.
I keep thinking that the Timberwolves came in 95, and then I realized it was Garnett that came in 95.
Yes, yes.
It seems like the Timberwolves started in 95.
Well, they pretty much did. Because
Before that, probably their best player was like Tony Campbell or Stephon Marbury and a couple other guys, but pretty much the Timberwolves' legacy began when Kevin Garnett
came. I think, wasn't Marbury after Garnett?
Was he? Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Tony Campbell's the one I could think of. I don't know, a couple other dudes. But yeah, pretty much the legacy of the T-Wolves started when Garnett came in 95. So I keep thinking that this place opened in 95. But yes, 1990 it opened. Mm-hmm. Other teams?
Timberwolves, the Minnesota Fighting Pike of the AFL for a year. And the
trying to put a pike on a jersey.
And the Minnesota Lynx, of course, still play there. They've been around since 99, pretty much. One of the expansion teams, I believe.
Yes, yep. And, they won. They're the defending – they're actually, I think, the defending WNBA champions. They went from – you want to talk about worst to first. They were like 2-27.
You know what that gets for me?
What?
Who cares? Yeah, they were added along with the Orlando Miracle.
Yeah. I just need to say that they were 2-20-something, and then they drafted Maya Moore with the number one pick, and then they won the title the next year. That doesn't happen in any other league, only in the WNBA.
Big fucking deal. Who cares?
This is that ridiculous. Anyway, okay. Yeah. Your attendance, pretty good one, 19,904. Is that a sellout?
Got it. It is over a sellout. Capacity is 19,356, but that might be since the renovation, so I'm not sure at the time, but I'm sure it was a sellout.
Yeah, 19,000. That's a jacked crowd, of course. Yeah. Buy rate, awesome, 1.61. Pretty good, actually. I know at this stage of the game, if a monthly pay-per-view gets over a one and it's not Mania, it's pretty good. And your announcers, of course, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. I remember Heat.
Looks like no matches.
No matches, I don't think. But I'll tell you something, though. Heat, from like February to, I think it kind of fizzles out, but kind of loses its steam in maybe like January or February of 2000, seems like.
Yeah, it hangs around for a little bit.
Heat was cranking.
Although, you know what? Heat was still pretty big, I think, in 2000, because that's when it moves over to MTV, and they had it live at the Dirty New York, or Dirty F New York, with Michael Cole and Taz hosting and all that stuff, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, at this stage, this whole summer, Heat was a vital show. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it would change, and we'll talk about the big television change in the next vault, but because I think it debuts that following Thursday, if I remember correctly. Yeah, we'll get to that at the next vault. But, yeah, at the time, though, JR, Heat was cranking. I mean, big stuff was going on in that 1 hour. Everyone thought it was a throwaway show. Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about when we reviewed Raw this past week. You know, we're going to reference that review quite a bit, I'm sure, tonight. But they were at that point, still talking about last night on Heat, this happened and that happened. And, yeah, things still went down on Heat, certainly at this point now, a year into its existence.
Yes. Yep. So, all right, let's hop in with our first match, which really has turned into a fairly hot feud. And it is a dual title match, JR, as it is for both the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental and European Championships. Each guy had one.
Nope.
One had both?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yes.
There's going to be a day.
When I look one
when
line
you
before,
get this
before
shit
saying
up,
something,
when you get this shit right, there's gonna come a day.
One line before it'll who knows when it'll be before I actually look below one line and actually realize that I could have waited before saying that. Okay, going into this match, D'Lo Brown is both the Intercontinental and European Champion. Of course, we mentioned
very good. I know. I was gonna say we talked about it two nights ago.
I know.
D'Lo won the European title at Fully Loaded. And then on the August 2nd Raw, he defeated Jeff Jarrett to win the IC title. That was a title-for-title match.
Yes.
And D'Lo had both straps around his waist. And as we talked about in the 8-9 episode of Raw, D'Lo was jumped by Jeff Jarrett out of the park while he was helping Mark Henry train. And then I don't think too much more happened after that on 8-16. I think they just kind of pushed us a little bit more. So coming out here, Jarrett and Deborah having a lot of issues. And they actually show them before the match fighting backstage, arguing, and Deborah ends up walking out on Jarrett and leaving. And she runs into D'Lo in the back, and D'Lo kind of consoles her and says, why don't you come to the ring with me? So Deborah actually comes out with D'Lo for this match. She's in his corner against Jarrett here.
Yes. And I tell you something. We already knew, for the most part, Jeff Jarrett's not a bad wrestler. I know a lot of guys rip him for a lot of other things in his distinguished career through all of the promotions he's been in. But let's be honest, he's not a bad wrestler. He's already had a 5-star pay-per-view match in his career almost exactly 4 years ago when he fought Shawn Michaels at In Your House 2. He's really not. I know you're not happy with him now, but wait, you don't get mad at him for a while. Chill out. He's really not a bad wrestler. And D'Lo, we have more than documented many times since late 98 that this guy really brings the goods at this point. So this is an excellent place to put this match. Great match to really fire the show up. Let me ask you, JR.
Yeah, good.
Well, I was about to say, we talk a lot about a lack of attention to detail rather than looking at the big picture. But in terms of match placement, they really have not done a bad job for the most part during this pay-per-view year when things have really been cranking, storylines have been very deep and at times complicated and cerebral in some ways, not to use that word a lot. But at least when it comes to laying out the shows, they really haven't done a bad job of that. Like, we haven't really had we have had one or two stinkers in the openers. But for the most part, at least they know how to get the show off to a good start in terms of laying the matches out.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You had a point. Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing with Jarrett is that he's just kind of bland in the ring. He's kind of basic. He doesn't fly. He doesn't stand out. Doesn't do anything in particular that well. He just does everything pretty good across the board. He can adapt to a lot of styles. Just doesn't really excel at them in my eyes, anyway. The problem was, I think, until this point, is he didn't have. I sounded like when Nick Kroll on the Kroll Show does that fucking
Guido character. The problem was that he did not have the heat or the character to really make that ring work pop in any way. So when you have a bland character and bland ring work, it leads to just bland overall. And I think at this point he was finally starting to get that character down. And, you know, it took, unfortunately, Owen Hart's passing for him to kind of bump up, step things up a little bit, and then getting into this odd women beating angle where, as we'll see, will really escalate over the next few weeks. But it was already kind of... he's basically become more of a dick. Instead of just arrogant and annoying, he's become a real asshole now. And it was actually a couple weeks before this. It might have been the week before where he attacked Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller was in the crowd to promote Mystery Men, if you remember that.
Ugh, that was terrible.
He called him into the ring and put him in the figure four. So he was just being an asshole all around at this point, ripping Deborah all the time. And that added just a little bit more interest into his matches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And, you know, Deborah at the time, let me ask you this. With Sable gone, has she filled the void?
She's filled the tit
sex
void.
Sexy void. Yeah.
I wouldn't say she's filled the star power void. I don't think she's broken out to that level, and she doesn't really... is it put in that position? She's usually just with Jarrett in the segment that she wasn't.
Right.
I think China.
In the ring.
From a star level.
Yeah.
In the ring and from a star level had become the dominant female.
Well, there was a big help because of that. And we obviously talked about it on the last show, and we'll get more into it during the main event. They've kind of helped her along. And obviously there's people to thank for that, obviously.
Right. And things do continued it to go well for her as 99 goes on. So I would say she was the next heir apparent. I think Deborah, maybe from a sex appeal standpoint, was there. And I'll tell you, the outfit she had on at this show was smoking and really pushing it. So she comes out, and then, of course, it all ends up being somewhat of a ruse as Mark Henry comes out. The referee's down. Henry grabs guitar. And was it the guitar or the belt? I think it was the guitar, right?
It was the guitar.
Yeah. So he's got the guitar, and he's teasing that he's going to hit Jarrett, and then, of course, he turns on D'Lo, smashes D'Lo in the head with the guitar, cost him both titles, so Jeff Jarrett wins both belts, and he now has Mark Henry, I don't want to say in his corner, but he's kind of slightly, loosely aligned with him, course, Deborah, what?
No, go ahead, finish your point.
And Deborah's back to being a heel. The whole thing was a setup with all them having the dissension. That was all just to distract D'Lo so Henry could interfere.
Right. But, of course, the real reason Mark Henry turned... Well, first off, it was not... It was pretty clear as day that was going to happen. I mean,
right.
That vignette that we talked about two nights ago, I mean, Mark Henry conveniently goes to take a leak in the woods or whatever, and then D'Lo's alone and gets the shit beat out. Come on. That was pretty easy to figure out. And number two, of course, the big deal was, JR, that Jeff Jarrett made a financial deal with Mark Henry. Mm-hmm. You help me win both belts. Hey, I don't need both. So the next night on Raw, Jeff Jarrett handed the European Championship to Mark Henry.
Yep.
So it was a financial deal. We'll get more into that at the next pay-per-view, but that's exactly what happened.
And Henry was fed up with D'Lo trying to basically riding him all the time to get him in shape and busting his balls. And, D'Lo just trying to help the poor guy before he has a heart attack. And Henry did not appreciate it, so...
Right.
He turns on his buddy. He goes with Jeff Jarrett, and he will be then granted the European title. So D'Lo's reign comes to an end, and as we'll see over the next few weeks, this is kind of, not just yet, but we're closing in on D'Lo's run for many reasons. And there will be one glaring reason and then a couple of others as well. But, he's had a great year. I'd say he really broke out. He had been good in the nation, but he really broke out when he defeated Triple H for the European title back on Raw in July of 98, and since then he's had a really, really good year.
Yes.
Really good run. And I like this match a lot. He definitely seemed like one of their young, bright stars that was maybe set to break out to be a major player, and we'll see if it happens. But at this point, it seemed like he would still be in the mix here for the title. It didn't seem like anything where he'd bump down. But I have enjoyed this month-long feud, and it was cool having D'Lo be the guy that had the double belts first before Jarrett took them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's a good match. One of the better openers of 99. But it made Jarrett, it kind of pushed Jarrett up the ladder on the heel ladder on the in the company. which makes what happens in a few months kind of silly. But again, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. So Jeff Jarrett is your new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental and European champion. But we'll talk about Unforgiven, that he doesn't hold both belts, but we'll get there. Next up, our not a title match, but what could lead to a title match. Technically, number one contenders. It is known as a tag team turmoil match.
Get used to it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of these. It is one.
What the hell is this shit?
I know, that's what a lot of people say about turmoil matches. there are one, two, three, four, five. Six teams.
Six tag teams.
I just wanted to make sure I got the number right. I'd rather do that than you know, the Quebecers had cool music. Okay, your teams. The freshly turned face, Edge and Christian.
Why don't we go in order? Why don't we let's start with the first match?
Okay, the first match. The two teams that flip flopped, JR. Not flip flop. Well, yeah, flip flopped.
Flippity floppity
at our that we talked about on the Raw. Edge and Christian, now no longer members of the Brood, and the Hardy Boys, now members of the freshly minted, freshly minted after 2 months, new Brood.
Yay.
It's like the Nine Wolf Packs in TNA or whatever the band or whatever that stupid thing was. In what becomes, although you may not know it at this moment, if you had some forethought, maybe you could, but one of the enduring tag team feuds of the last 15 years.
And you could tell they were setting these guys up to really become
yeah.
paired together and stalwarts mm-hmm. of the tag division. So already starts here. They go 5 minutes. Edge and Christian with an impressive win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on the way the build had gone and the turn with the Brood and all that stuff, you would have thought maybe the Hardys would get the win here. So mm-hmm. interesting to see Edge and Christian pick up that victory. And they move on to the next match.
Yes.
Against two members of the crumbling ministry, which is pretty yes. much no longer together, but these guys are still friends. That's Midian.
The first two guys that were drafted, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, the first original. Two guys were drafted. Midian, complete
the expansion
with,
draft picks.
Yes, the expansion draft picks with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Tony Campbell. Midian, complete with eye in the jar.
Mm-hmm.
And Viscera.
Yep.
Of course, the former Mabel. Sorry, no more candy pants. And they go for about 6 minutes, and
they go for about two change. All right, don't go by our times. I'm going by Graham's here.
Oh, okay.
But those aren't the times of each match. I mean, that's the – can you see
it? Oh, you're adding up there? Total. That's right. We added up total. All right. So this went just about a minute, I think.
Because
right?
if not, then according to you, this match would have been about 40 minutes.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that's true. It could have, like a Survivor
like 40
Series.
Minutes, yeah.
40 minutes of turmoil.
Yes.
So we have about 59 seconds. What does Graham have?
He has no life. No, he has about...
well, besides that.
I don't know who we speak. He has like 230 or so.
Okay. So we have a little shorter. But in any event, Edge and Christian win again.
Hmm.
So they're definitely being positioned as a future tag team studs.
Yeah, and really put over well here as the plucky faces making the run. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the next matchup here, a guy that we've mentioned a few times but haven't really got into, and that's Albert, Prince Albert and Draws.
Mm-hmm.
This would actually end up being Draws' final pay-per-view. Did you want to talk about this now? Should we wait? Because I know we kind of teased it last match. And
We might as well, because if he's never on again.
Yeah, I just didn't know if we talk about it when we get further along with D'Lo, but I guess not. I guess we can just do it now.
Yeah, we can do it now.
All right, so on the October 5th SmackDown taping.
At the Nassau Coliseum.
Yep. Draws received the European title match. I guess this is giving away future storylines, but against D'Lo Brown. During the match, D'Lo was going to give him a running powerbomb, but Draws slipped backwards and landed on his head. He was down in the ring for a long time, and it was later revealed he was paralyzed from the waist down. The match was cut from the airing of SmackDown. D'Lo never really would rebound from the incident, like we mentioned, even though Draws completely forgave him and told him that accidents happened. He didn't hold him responsible at all. D'Lo always blamed himself, and it took him a while to really get that confidence back, as we'll see over the next pay-per-views that we see him on. Draws, to this day, still in a wheelchair, received an undisclosed amount of money. Basically, he's a lifetime job. I know he wrote for the website for a while, and I know he visits from now and again.
And there's and you know what's funny? I don't think they ever said his paralysis would be permanent. I think they always said that there is a good chance that as time progresses, that he may gain. And I think there is – he's at a point now where I think he kind of moves a little better from when I last read. I don't remember – I remember them saying that the doctors told him he'd be paralyzed, but that over time he could regain – he could never wrestle again, obviously. But there, right. there was a possible long-term chance that he might be able to walk again. I don't know if he is, but – I know that he was gaining some movement, but obviously he never wrestled again. And Draws always kept up a great
and he had a good attitude. And like I said, he did the articles on the website. He was part of Bite This, the internet show that would start up.
He was on a couple of DVD docs. So, yeah.
He married a longtime employee, Julie Youngberg, days after the accident. They actually married, and they were together until 2005. They divorced. So it initially actually left him as a quadriplegic. I know I mentioned paraplegic.
Mm-hmm.
Draws a sensory gain movement in his upper body and arms. It can be
seen
in a shoot interview online where he holds his right arm up. So it seems like he at least gained that back. I don't know if he'll ever get it back in his lower body.
That's what it was. He was a quadriplegic and he got his upper body back. So at least that's good. At least it was a – but yeah, D'Lo, we'll, like you said, JR, we'll document it over the – ensuing pay-per-view vaults, but D'Lo is just never the same. And with all due respect to Draws, forgiving, yes, it's nice to know that, but at the same time, that never goes away to think you've done that, even if it was an accident. And of course, as Kevin Kelly told us at the last time he was on last week, the only two tapes sitting in a library somewhere buried in some catacombs of Titan Towers, there are two videotapes that will never be aired or erased ever again. The first one is apparently of Owen falling, and the other one is this match. So,
and it's funny too because I meant to mention this before when we listened to the open. They actually show the clip of Shane counting out Taker and Steve from Over the Edge. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. Now, the end of the Draws D'Lo match was on the don't try this at home disclaimer
the move. They always show Draws loaded onto the stretcher.
They show him in the.
I remember reading the spoilers the next day. This was during now into sophomore year, so I was living with Adam at this point, and I remember our ritual every Tuesday morning before we head to class, or every Wednesday morning rather, before heading to classes, he'd get up, we'd read the SmackDown spoilers, and then head out to class. And I remember reading that, and we're like, holy shit! And it was also that same week that Gorilla Monsoon passed away, and I remember that just being a...
Next day.
Yeah, it was the next day, right? So I remember that being just a rough week, like, oh, God. It was like, Draws paralyzed, Gorilla dies. It was a lot of bad news there that week for them. The Draws thing was tough because he was a guy that had a... He had somewhat of a future. You know, you don't know if maybe he'd be a long-term major star, but he definitely seemed like a guy who could hang around the undercard for a long time and just put guys over and do his thing. You know, the hardcore division was really starting to pick up steam and something he probably would have been involved with there.
I think he would have been good on the website. Maybe he could have helped developmental somewhere down
the
line.
Yeah, I think he had a good future as a company man.
Yeah.
So sad stuff there for Draws. We haven't seen too much of him on pay-per-view really since the LOD stuff back in 98, the Pusher Man and all that stuff. We'll talk to Kevin about that when he's back on. We'll see, what was going on backstage that night. But a very sad week for two guys in the WWF, both on very opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yes.
But both equally as sad. So Draws' partner here, Prince Albert, real name Matt Bloom, made his debut in 1997. Bumped around Memphis a little bit and some other indie scene. Then he debuted on WWF television April 11th, 99 on Heat, saved Draws from a beating at the hand of the Big Boss Man. He was dubbed Prince Albert, the personal tattooist of Draws, and they formed a short-lived trio with a guy named Key, with Vic Grimes dressed in white. I think Kevin talked about this a while ago. And he was supposed to be one of, like, the drug dealer or whatever, but that went nowhere.
Right.
And, of course, Draws. They remained a team into October when Draws was paralyzed. What did you enjoy the name Prince Albert?
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. But you know what I also find very ironic, JR? Prince Albert made his debut as Matt Bloom, and that fall, you lived with Wayne Bloom. Very impressive. Great symmetry there.
Do you think they came up with this idea because you showed Triple H your Prince Albert?
Hey, mine's not pierced. What? No. It was an interesting character. I mean, another good mid-card guy, and we saw him on and off, and now here he is, part of the tag team. One thing I have to say, JR, and as we continue on talking about this match, we always say that, like, the end of 98 into 99, the tag division was a little bleh. I feel like it was starting to really strengthen, though, again, at this point, at least in terms of quantity.
Yeah.
We're not talking, you know, 88 or 89 tag teams.
No, but you're right. They're starting to focus on it again more, and now they're trying to kind of get the titles out of, well, they're still up in the upper card, but they got a lot of people underneath fighting to get positioned to go up and challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I agree with you there. They definitely at least started to flesh it out more than it was in, say, like, right. 98, whereas the Outlaws and LOD were crumbling and nothing else, the DOA. I mean, the 98 was a wasteland for tag teams.
Yes.
As hot as the champions were.
And incidentally, so, yeah. Draz's, before we go, Draz's final pay-per-view record, 5 matches, and he was 2-3.
Yep.
His 2 wins came at Over the Edge 98, Judgment Day 98, and he lost Breakdown 98, the 99 Rumble, and of course, here.
So they lose here. Let me just see what. I'm going to go by Graham's time since that's what we're using.
Mm.
They lost here in at the 9:38 mark of this match, so about 2 minutes after the last fall. Edge pins Albert with the downward spiral. That then brings out the Acolytes, the former tag team champions, and they go about 4 minutes with Edge and Christian before Bradshaw pins Christian with the clothesline from hell. And then we get our final tag team, Scott.
Yes.
Another debut.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Fightin', the Scrappin' Holly cousins. Bob Holly and his cousin, who just made his debut the week before the show,
mm-hmm.
Crash Holly.
Yes.
Crash Holly is portrayed by Mike Lockwood, debuted in 1989. In the Bay Area, stayed there till 1994, took some time off when he dislocated his shoulder, and took about 18 months off to recover. He worked the indie circuit as Irish Erin O'Grady. In 1996, he joined All-Pro Wrestling, and he had several matches with the aforementioned Vic Grimes.
Mm-hmm.
He spent some time in ECW, mainly dark matches and tryout stuff. Then he received a tryout in January 20th, 1998 with the WWF. They're both signed to contracts, both him and Grimes. They were sent to Power Pro Wrestling, which was WWF's developmental program at the time. They had some success there. Coordinator Bruce Pritchard sent Lockwood to Mexico to prepare him for the style of WWF's Lucha Libre show, Super Astros. He wrestled in Monterey for 3 months under a mask and then ended up not working Super Astros as much, came up and was Crash Holly, storyline cousin of Hardcore Holly, August 16th Raw. And it was an interesting storyline they did because Hardcore says, here's a guy that's just as tough and as much of a super heavyweight as I am. And this is a guy that's, you know, half a Holly size comes out. And right away they start brawling and fighting because they start bitching at each other. So even on the night Crash debuted, they were having issues already and fighting and whatnot. So they get into the turmoil here and then they actually end up losing to the Acolytes. The Acolytes become, once again, the number one contenders for the tag team titles.
I definitely think, you know, it's funny, you and I talked about Hardcore Holly being in the stupid, you know, she's still be injecting himself in this super heavyweight thing and butting into main event feuds and things now. I think adding Crash makes it even, kind of legitimizes it at least and gives it some legs. When they would take tag team, they would be announced as over 800 pounds,
yeah.
Which I always thought was very funny.
I liked him as a team. I thought, again, yeah. Like you said, they had some depth to the tag division, and they had a pretty good gimmick, the fight. You know, we haven't had a tag team that's, like, related that's fought. You know, we haven't really seen that in a while. We've had the tag team partners forced a team that don't get along, but this is kind of a cool dynamic to see these two guys that are related and buddies always, you know, arguing and pissing and moaning at each other.
Right, exactly. And they last, till obviously they're the last team. However, the Acolytes get the victory, and Farouk and Bradshaw are your number one contenders for the World Wrestling Federation tag team titles, which will be defended later this evening.
Did you think this was a good choice?
Yes. Look, forget that. With or without the Ministry, which was starting to obviously fizzle out, they were a good tag team,
yep.
Farouk and Bradshaw. Big, you know, I mean, come on. Right up our wheelhouse. Big fucking Haas tag team. Big dudes, you know, who put on, you know, power moves. Exact, right up our alley. So you always got to have at least. And really, if you look, JR, at the rest of this roster, at the rest of this match, they're the really only ones in that category.
And they've been legitimized, too, with that tag title reign. I mean, the Hardys had their reign, but it was quick. The Acolytes kind of had more of a stable title reign and had been. I don't think if they hadn't had the gold yet, it may have made this a little bit tougher. But I think since they've been kind of established now as players and legit champions, it made it sense to have them win this match here.
Yeah, I think so, too. No, I have no problem with it at all. And it was a fun match. I enjoyed it. A lot of action. Teams are good. And as we said, the earlier teams and all these teams, except maybe Draz and Albert, but all these teams would kind of get themselves involved in things over the next, 6-8 months. So this wasn't just a one night thing of teams. Nobody's going away. So, I enjoyed the match. I'm happy that the Acolytes won.
Yeah, happy.
Happy Pappy. But clearly Edge and Christian are positioned as studs in the division. And
yeah, they definitely look the best in this outside of the Acolytes.
Yes. So there you go. Your new number one contenders for the tag team titles. Our Haas tag team of the moment, Farouk and Bradshaw, the Acolytes. And also helps too, JR, that as we've documented, Farouk is in like working shape. So after being, the days of no, please are gone.
Way gone. Yep.
So that helps too.
No,
so
he was in great shape and his very high impact offense he was working, which was great too. So yep, that's a good decent turmoil for its pay per view debut here.
Yes. So we're 2 for 2 for the night.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, we don't have. It's not a match, but it's a debut. Big debut. We've already discussed
a debut, huh?
A debut. What are we in?
My God, Casper the Ghost has made his debut here on SmackDown.
On SmackDown, by God. We talked about him on Monday.
Ready? Debut.
I don't know. The next time we're in Montreal, it's gonna be a while.
Debut.
By the way, just an interesting side note. A little turn back the clock segment. Speaking of French Canadian, that was the original joke when Guillante was created. Next time he comes around, I'm going to tell him he's actually French Canadian. That was the running joke back at episode 65.
I see.
He's French Canadian. That's what I think it is. I dare you to come back on Guillante someday and admit that you're really French Canadian and you're not Argentinian at all. I'm singing French. Any event, speaking of Canadians and debuts. We talked about this guy Monday night, of course, on the huge Raw from Chicago.
Huge.
What happens is, the segment begins with the Road Dogg, the D-O-double-G. Road Dogg Jesse James comes out, and we have a hardcore title match coming up momentarily. And the Road Dogg, who of course was very entrenched in the hardcore division.
Yeah.
Getting back into it now.
Yeah.
And gets back in. I'm saying early in the year he was entrenched. Yeah. Back into it now. Indeed. Challenges the winner of the next match, which we'll get to in a moment. But he is interrupted by our newest debut. And that is, speaking of Canadians, Mr. Chris Jericho.
Yes, like you said, we talked about him Monday. So if you want to relive his debut and where he came from and his background. And actually, we'll get to the full background next month at Unforgiven when he makes his debut match. But if you want to just hear about his debut here in the WWF on TV, you can go back to Monday's show, the August 9th Raw. The next week on August 16th, he showed some balls again. He actually came out interrupted during a promo with The Big Show and The Undertaker. Got in their face, Jericho did. And then he actually forged a bond with Howard Finkel, who stepped in to be basically his lackey. He was looking for some direction.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that a little bit here. So Jericho comes out, and he cuts up Road Dogg pretty good. He goes back and forth. He calls SummerSlam, SummerSham. More of the stuff ripping the boring and bland promotion like he did on Raw when he ripped that show. Now he's ripping SummerSham. And Dogg basically tells him to suck it, and Jericho leaves. So a good spot if you weren't going to have Jericho wrestle yet. Do you think they should have, or do you think this was okay?
This was okay. There was so much star power in this show. Why drown it?
Yeah, they could have done a squash with him and someone?
No, I'm okay with it. Okay. I'm okay with it.
It almost makes him come off like a bigger star to do this.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah. The secondary shows coming up in the next 2 months
yeah.
Needed him more. So this is, we got way too much star power in this match and way too many decent matches. We don't necessarily need we didn't need him to be wasted in some middling undercard thing. He'd be more needed the next month and the month after and from there on out. So no, I had no problem with this. It was fine. It was fine. It was a tease. So now, what was Road Dogg talking about to begin with?
Guess.
Oh, okay. You want us to skip it then?
No, no, I don't.
No, the next match we can do. Who cares? Our next title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship, is on the line. Your champion, Mr. Head himself, or Mr. Pierre himself, speaking of French-Canadian wooded animals, Al Snow, taking on JR's favorite hardcore wrestler of 1999. Of course, the great Ray Traylor himself, Big Boss Man. What wasn't he on? He could have been like the sheriff of the whatever town they were in, police department. Could have been sitting there with Herc under the under the tent there with the Neidhart and his high energy pants. I can smell a couple of in the air. It's terrible. Movie is not terrible. The song is bad. Do we know who sings it? I'm sure you guys investigated that somewhere down the line. Who was the unfortunate schmuck that had to sing that song?
I like to pretend Bruce Haggett.
Let me guess. It's on WrestleMania the album.
I wish.
It was done by Simon. Boss Man kind of distancing himself now from Vince and kind of being out of that role. Kind of this is his first real on his own thing since coming back. And with fits perfectly. Fits perfectly. And this begins a pretty good entertaining, if anything, feud between these two. We'll get to their rematch next month. But this was okay. Nothing crazy. Match two of three on pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because Road Dogg ends up doing roving commentary with them because they brawl to the back.
Yes.
And then they actually end up going across the street to a bar. And they brawl in the bar, they're fighting on the pool table, and they hit someone with the beer mug and everything else. And I actually like this. I thought it was one of the more unique hardcore matches we've seen since probably when they went out to the river back in February. It was cool to see them make use of the surroundings and go over to the bar. And having Road Dogg go with them and do commentary on the spot was interesting. So Al Snow gets the win. Like we said, he uses the beer mug. And wins back his hardcore title that he lost. Actually, hits one of the balls with two billiard balls, and they covers on the pool table. And Road Dogg actually got involved as well. Hits Bossman with the nightstick. So it's called the Blues Alley Bar was the name of the bar. So Snow regains his hardcore title, and then randomly he's running back to the ring, and a man we've talked about before, Blue Meanie, and his new pal, the guy who's actually been on the show before, Stevie Richards, are kidnapping Pepper, Al Snow's dog that we mentioned on Monday night.
Yes.
And Snow beats the piss out of them and then takes the dog and leaves. So weird. He's just kind of happening to be coming back to the ring and he runs into them trying to mess with the dog. So Snow is your hardcore champion again, coming off fully loaded. And what did you think of – did you really think Snow had just completely asserted himself as the man of this division?
Absolutely. He hasn't left it all year. And, that's his kind of style. He's kind of a – I don't mean this to sound disrespectful, but he's a poor man's Mick in terms of putting his body on the line.
That's racist.
But not to the extent that Mick would put his body on the line. But it just fit him.
I think a poor man's Mick is quite racist. And an oxymoron.
Yes, exactly. Yes. and a non sequitur. But I mean, no, he's been fine. This is where he needs to be. He's not going to wrestle in icy title feuds and that kind of stuff.
You're right. This is perfect. A good spot right for him and good spot for Boss Man too. And it was good to see Snow get his title back. And then this feud probably should have ended here as we know where it heads. But it does not end here by any means. And I think this is probably the best hardcore match on TV we've had in a while. I'd say probably since. Since maybe February. I like the one at Backlash wasn't bad, but I would say this is the best pay-per-view hardcore match we've had. I like the brawl in the bar. I thought it was unique. I thought it was smart of them to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. So it was fun, and I also love Boss Man in this role. This is right up his alley. This is his kind of match. And, you know, Vince was being good to him because he was a good employee. So even though his official role is like, you know, Vince's muscle is no longer necessary, it was nice that, you know, the boss man has stuck around in this role as, you know, as a brawler and that kind of thing. So, and it kind of, it's almost like kind of a reward for him to be involved in title feuds and stuff, because unfortunately he never really had the chance when he was here the first time.
Yeah.
You know, through the awesome, I mean, he made good paychecks during the Federation years, but other than the, you know, obviously the IC title match at WrestleMania 7, he really never got any legit title feuds. So it's nice to leave him, get involved in something. So, but, all right. So yeah, they're tied at one apiece. Al Snow wins the hardcore title that Boss Man had won, had beaten. Just slipped my mind. He didn't beat Al. He beat, I can't remember now. Totally slipped my mind. Never mind. I'm not even going to try and guess. But he'd get another shot at Al, of course, and get in Al's head.
Wrong.
So what happens when Gronk strikes out or something?
No, that happens when you're constantly wrong. He did beat Al. That was fully loaded. I just mentioned it.
Wrong if I didn't guess. That's why I'm
taking but, well, you were wrong because you said he didn't beat Al, and that is who he beat. So.
Oh, that is. Okay. Why did I think it was someone else?
Well, I just said it like 2 minutes ago. So.
I thought it was. See, but I was actually disputing it because I thought it was somebody else. But
no.
Anyway, Gronk strikes out. So there you go. Al Snow.
Shift the blame.
Once again.
And you want to be Deputy Grand Knight.
And the deputy, I'm going to be like Sid. And the Deputy Grand Knight is. I'm going to stand up halfway through.
That's so, my ballot. As long as you slam the table and crumple the papers in your hand.
That's exactly. I'm going to have Dr. G take a picture of me if I lose. That's
exactly. That'd be awesome.
I'm going to have a workout. You know, I'm going to have
might have to come down for that just to see the announcement.
He may lose the title shot too. You might see a double heel turn. All right. So in any event, Al Snow, your new World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Champion. But this feud will continue. We have another title match, but I kind of want to take JR's stance on this and say, who cares? World Wrestling Federation Women's Championship, an abysmally bad match. I know I just made up abysmally, but who cares? These two shouldn't have made up a match. Ivory, who is your Women's Champion, defeats Tori. Of course, Tori was at the beginning of the year, crazy Sable's a crazy stalker chick. And Ivory, of course, was sold or bought for Mark Henry by D'Lo. So she was a piece
of
meat.
I forgot about that. The Val Venis, Mark Claire porn ring and
yes, exactly.
Prostitution ring.
The backseat of Armento's car.
Yeah.
So
he's like, Claire gets to the back. He's like, all right, hurry up. We got Ivory in the trunk. And Anthony's like, hold on. I've got to put on WINS and get the traffic before we can go driving. I don't know where to go.
Where to go? I got to get the GPS going.
I got to plug in the GPS.
I'll just go anywhere.
Going to take Lodi Street.
What is it? Patterson Road? Patterson Plank Road? Everything's on Patterson Plank Road. Okay. So there we go. Ivory.
Going to get this whore to D-Lo. Hurry up. Don't drop the scarf.
Couldn't you see Claire dressed like Vic Grimes?
Oh boy,
white jacket, white pants. So Ivory's your new women's
pulled into that deal.
All right, so Ivory's your new women's champ. Is your women's champion, and she retains it against Tori.
I mean, that's what happened to what was that bitch's name at Ascent? Rachel.
Yes,
that's what happened to her too.
Yes,
Claire threw her in the trunk on the way to San Diego.
she wish she'd stayed there.
Sold her off. Why is she still there?
Not Rachel. Are you thinking of
who's the annoying one?
No, there was a lot of them. Yeah, Rachel was quite annoying. Yeah,
the one that always had the pictures of her kids.
Yeah, Rachel cried in the middle of the day because somebody got sick and she left and left all the work for everybody else to do. Yeah, that was her.
She cried because you didn't know who defeated who the big boss man defeated.
Exactly. She threw things at me and I gotta go. Damn you, it's Al Snow. So, all right. Next up, this is a sad match for you, JR. This is one of your boys.
That's it. Wait, so we're not gonna talk about that at all.
Well, no, I didn't. I was kind of hoping we didn't have to. No,
I mentioned a little bit. So Ivory won the women's title from Deborah on the June 14th Raw, and it was probably a good move. Get it on, get it on to Ivory. She won it in Worcester, actually.
Yeah, pretty much.
And not much here. They go 4 minutes and pretty poor, like you said. Not for the first time in a while, we actually have two ladies that are trained in the ring and know what the hell they're doing.
Yes.
And they look uncomfortable and they're kind of sloppy. And, you know, they both had experience in different promotions. It's kind of odd that they just was this bad for kind of women that actually knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah, very weird. Very weird. The women's division would pick up a little bit in 2000. Well, actually a lot in 2000.
Well, they got a little ways to go, yeah. The rest of 99 is
a mess. Yeah, it's a disaster.
Garbage fire.
Yeah, it is a garbage fire. I like that. I'm going to borrow that. Yeah, it is a garbage fire. It picks up big time in 2000, but we'll get there. All right, now, JR, I know you were stalling. That's why you want to talk about this, because you don't want to talk about this match coming up, because it is the end of the road for one of your boys. Inside the line.
Wait.
Fake out.
Wait. I picture them like playing this in the background during the climax scene of Thunder in Paradise when they're faking getting it on in the bedroom. And Hogan's faking his orgasm. He's like, oh, hang on. It's coming.
Where are you, bro?
There it is.
That may go down as one of our most popular movie reviews of all time.
In our minds. I don't know about anyone else's. But
it else, yes. All right. Inside the Lion's Den.
Yeah.
Lion's Den weapons match, JR. Our man there, Steve.
Billy's dream match.
That's right. Yes. Taking on your boy in his farewell. Yes. His farewell. Ken Shamrock.
Want to knuckle up on me?
I'm going to the HOBs. Do you have a review in front of you? Because I was about to ask you his final. Well, it's a simple answer.
Yes, it's always yes. The answer is always yes.
Right, then never mind.
Never mind.
So anyway,
face.
He. Bruce says no.
Bruce too busy trying to fix Thunder.
Great boat, never works. So here he is. This feud's been going on for what?
Yeah, since like June, yeah.
Yeah, a couple months anyway. Do you think this could have been... Did you get as much out of it as you wanted to as a fan of both these guys, or could this have gone... did you expect more?
No. I thought it was well done.
Okay.
The only question I have is Shamrock winning it fully loaded. I thought Blackman should have won that match to set up the rematch here. But they do go to the rematch. They kept attacking each other. Shamrock beat him up with a chain, then Blackman beat him up the week after. They fought again on the 8/16 Raw leading into this, and they just basically just kept jumping each other and brawling. So back in July, of course, Shamrock won the parking lot brawl, and here, like you said, they're inside a weapons cage. And we all knew who made the stipulation, Scott. So that was Steve Black and Blackman, and we all know the promo that he did it in, infamous one that is now on the Facebook page, of course.
Yes.
That is Steve Blackman yelling at poor Terry Taylor.
Mm.
And actually, you know what? I think we may have it here.
Comments from Test. I know, Steve Blackman, there's something you have to say.
You bet your ass there is. Shamrock, it's real simple. I'll step into your world, the Lion's Den, if you step into mine. And that is weapons all around the cage. And anyone bad enough to get one can use it. So, this way, this thing's got to end one way or another.
Damn you, Josh Richard. I mean, Red Rooster.
So this way, this thing's going to end one way or another. And he, of course, the whole time he's just yelling at Terry Taylor and pointing at his face. Is this phenomenal?
Yes. It is very phenomenal.
Never to be topped.
However, JR, it's time to read the eulogy. Ken Shamrock would enter a brief feud with the brand spanking new Chris Jericho in about a month. However, would get hurt again as we got closer to the next pay-per-view. He would be replaced in the match, and we'll get to who that is next month, and would never be mentioned or seen again on World Wrestling Federation television. Had some creative differences with Vince. I don't know what that would be.
Maybe at the time of this he had, and I think he's been mentioned since.
Yeah.
He's been on DVDs and stuff since now. So.
Right, exactly.
But he's never showed up again. Never came.
Yeah, he's never showed up
again. Reunions or anything like that.
Right. Mainly he just wanted to get back into, like, you know, UFC and Strike Force and that kind of thing. Ultimate Fighting. No, not the tag team Strike Force. That would be way too intense. Imagine. Imagine a six-man. Seriously? Of all people?
He deserves it. It's Kenny.
I'm about to say, could you imagine? I said Strikeforce, you know, like I was, at the time I'm talking about the MMA promotion, but could you imagine Martel, Tito, and Shamrock singing?
That'd be awesome, all in the white tights. Shamrock
so go- girls and cars together.
Shamrock goes out with a bang here, though, with the lime green tights. I like this combo he had.
Yes.
The lime green.
Yep.
Like a monster.
He would briefly resurface in mid-2002 when he was actually crowned the NWA World Champion on the very first TNA pay-per-view. There were other often rumors, substantiated or not, that he was on his way back to feud with a guy that would debut a little bit later in the year, but it never happened. He would never return. His final pay-per-view record, 28 matches, and he was a very Shamrock-like 14-14.
Yeah, curious how many of those losses were DQ or some kind of shadiness, mainly in his feud with The Rock.
Yeah, or some kind of internal bleeding or something, the master of the internal bleeding. He was 1-1 at the Rumble and 0-2 in the Rumble matches themselves. 0-2 at WrestleMania, 2-1 at King of the Ring, 2-1 at SummerSlam, 2-1 at Survivor Series, and 7-6 at everything else. So if you take away the 7-6, JR, his record in the Big Four was...
Oh, Big Five. King of the Ring.
A Big Five, yeah, would be, let's see, not counting the Rumble.
Here we go. Abacus out. This math underway.
Two marbles this way.
I'm sure you knew.
I'll break your ankle. You stupid.
Okay, never mind. Oh, wait, 5-5.
Oh, God, still with the math.
7-6.
I thought it was just a joke. All right. So, the end of Ken Shamrock. Very sad. One of my favorites during the stretch. I always dug Shamrock, and I know he didn't always completely get it, but I feel like he always worked his ass off.
You know what's sad, though?
I feel like he never took a night off.
No, I don't think he ever did either. I even said it in my comments, bigelow34.proboards.com. I always said that he never took a match off.
No.
I don't think. Never. I don't think he knew how to take a match off.
No, he always went balls to the wall, and I loved the heel run. From late 98 to early 99, to me, that was my favorite stretch of his. I enjoyed him even in late 97 as kind of the new guy on the block trying to overcome DX, and didn't really care that they were beating the shit out of him at every turn. And this guy that was just going all out to try and get the title. Of course, he was great at WrestleMania 13 as a referee, and he's just had a great run. He really has, for only being around for about 2.5 years. A very memorable run here. And one of the stalwarts of the turnaround time. To me, one of the guys I think of when I think of them turning the product around in 97, 98, he comes to mind. Being there during a very important stretch. I wish he would have came back at some point. Mm. I mean, I get why he didn't, but Ken Shamrock, a good wrestler, a great friend.
What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows.
So get out of my way.
You know what's
sad? It's a cursey chuckle. I thought it was one of those brilliant things that's been said on this show.
I didn't know.
What the fuck?
Anna.
Tough crowd. Jesus.
Oh, I just have the vision of you in the gloves. Jim with the fucking...
I'm kind of disappointed it took me this long to think of that.
Gene Best. But I had a sad thing. I said, great question. It totally.
Yeah, I'm sure it was great. But yeah, the
I'm
match
sure it was great. The match is question of the week.
The match itself, nine
no
minutes.
No sandwich didn't give me the question.
Oh, God. All right, LaRue. 9 minutes here in the cage. A lot of, weapons used. And...
Oh, whoa. You know, my jokes may not be the best, but for fuck's sakes, come on.
Well, I meant the sandwich thing.
Oh. If you give me a sandwich. No, my question was, you think he should have stuck around, though, because with the roster changes that we'll talk about over the next 6 months, I think he would have fit great in 2000.
I agree.
I think he short-sighted his ability, and I think he should have stuck
around. Well, I don't think he short-sighted. I think he – and the whole thing was he wanted to get back into MMA at a young enough age. And it sounded silly at the time. because everyone's like, well, you're not that young, and who the fuck wants to go to MMA? Because it wasn't what it is now.
No, right.
So I think a lot of people questioned it, especially with the money they were pulling in, you know, in Stanford at this point. It seemed like the worst time to go.
Right.
And, yeah, I think he could have an awesome feud with a lot of the guys, or awesome matches with a lot of the guys that were coming in. And I think he still should have left at this point for a little bit. I think if he left and came back in, like, February or March after a little break, he needed some time off. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he was fried. He didn't take him in much
And
time
even
off.
On TV-wise, I feel like he really needed, you know, just a break.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so.
Yeah. Okay, so he
for wins. For our sake, I guess is what I'm saying. I think he was getting a little, I don't want to say played out, but he a little stale.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like with going back to face so quick, I feel like he was a little stale. He needed some time off. But I do wish he would have came back at 2000, because with some of those guys, he could have had some great matches.
I concur. And it's a bummer. But I'll miss Chammy. I will. But do you find it weird that he won this match, though?
No, because they didn't know he was leaving yet.
That is true. They didn't know he was leaving.
No, he had to win this. Blackman, you could sacrifice him. It doesn't matter. Even if Shamrock was losing, they knew he was leaving. They still could have had him win here. Blackman fails to answer the referee's 10 count after he gets a kendo stick to the head. I've dug this feud. Not a surprise. You know, I like both these guys. So Shamrock wins, and we say farewell.
Yes. Very sad. Next up, the first of the big highlight matches of SummerSlam. And this goes back to June. This feud's been bubbling for a good couple of months now.
No burbling this week?
No burbling, just plain bubbling. No burble.
That's too bad.
Just bubble.
Burble, burble.
Burble, burble. Back on June 7th.
Splash, splash.
Back on June 7th, when the higher power storyline was sadly unfulfilling, and we had a new CEO, Steve Austin. Remember, he asked the four members of the union what they wanted. Of course, the four union members were Mick Foley, Big Show, our man Shammy, and Test. I don't remember what Foley wanted. Foley took time off.
No, he gave fuck, what did he do?
Oh.
He gave someone like a title match or something. No, yeah. he chose for Triple H to face The Rock with his legs in the cast.
With his legs in the cast, right. That's right. Shamrock got Vince.
Yeah, he had a match with Vince, yep.
Match with Vince. And Big Show
had a match with The Undertaker.
Had a title match with The Undertaker, and that's the one where he chokeslams him through the ring.
Yep.
Okay. What did Test want? Test didn't want a match. Test didn't want a title.
Test is a lover, not a fighter.
Exactly. Remember, guns don't kill people.
I kill people.
Test wanted a date with Stephanie. Of course, evil Big Brother Shane.
Mm-hmm.
None of it. So he brought in his boys. Might as well talk about them now, making their...
Well, we mentioned them here and there.
We mentioned them, yeah. Of course, his boys from Greenwich, just down the road from where I am right now.
Ugh.
I don't even like Greenwich. Two of the guys are actual Greenwich guys. The third one, of course, isn't. The Mean Street Posse, Joey Abs, was the one who was not from Greenwich. He's the new one. Pete Gass, who I see as a...
Awesome theme.
Why do I feel like I see you walking through the halls of Hendricken with this music?
Well, I was out of Hendricken by the time the song came out, but I used to strut around my house with it on. Put on my sweater vest, walk around.
Yes.
Pete Gasparino.
Pete Gas, who I still see at the shop, right? Not the one near us, but not the one near our building. No, not that one. The other one. The better one. Not the dumpster one down the street from my house. Down the street from my work. Rodney, also a... actual member of the Mean Streets of Greenwich. But, of course, they needed a guy who could actually wrestle because those two guys couldn't.
They brought in Jason Arndt.
Yes, a.k.a. Joey Abs, who was in Memphis.
Yeah, so Tess has run through all these guys. We talk about Monday night. And on that show Monday is when he finally finished off Joey Abs. The final week, the final Raw before this, August 16th, Shane got the last laugh in. He attacked Test and used one of Steve Blackman's kendo sticks and busted Test's ribs. Mm-hmm. So that leads into here. Test is banged up. The Mean Street Posse is banged up. But Shane thought he was going to have to go it alone against Test because he just assumed that the whole posse was out. So Shane comes out by himself. He turns around. This music hits. And out comes the posse, all taped up, all banged up, but they were there to support their boy. And they were rocking some awesome Hawaiian shirts, which is fantastic.
Yes,
and then top it off, there was a couch at ringside, and they sat on the couch.
Yes.
Which is great as well. So a lot of hype for this match. The crowd was pretty mm-hmm. into it.
Yeah.
It was a good story coming in. You really wanted to see Tess and Stephanie end up together. Shane had done a good job as the asshole brother that was stopping them, getting in the way. And Scott and I rewatched this match today
mm-hmm.
just to confirm my thought that it's just one of the most fun. You know, you're not going to say technically great, but one of the most fun pay-per-view matches probably of the year when you factor in the storyline and how hard they work and all the extra booking. Patterson and Briscoe get involved because they had issues with the posse over the summer. And they come out and they help Test out, and Test eventually gets to win with the elbow off the top. And mm-hmm. during this match, this is when Shane busted out for the first time, I believe, the leap off the top turnbuckle through the table.
Yes. A clip that was used often
mm-hmm.
in many video pieces for various topics. I don't know, was it on the no, there was something else on the Don't Do This at Home that involved him, but we'll talk about that when it happens. But this match is just amazing.
For who's involved? I mean, Test had never even come close to this. They're not even close. Like, if you were looking for guys to carry Shane, I mean, I think heading in, everyone thought this was going to be a train wreck. I mean, it was a great storyline, but everyone was like, well, Test hasn't done shit since he debuted.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't had any, even close to a decent match. And Shane had really only wrestled twice, and once was in a, garbaged up clusterfuck at King of the Ring, and the other one was the X-Pac carried him at WrestleMania. Mm. So no one knew what to really expect here, and they deliver. They really do. They go all out, 12 minutes of brawling, the posse gets involved, like we said, the Stooges get involved. And Test gets a win. Stephanie comes out after and hugs Test, and now would be allowed to date Stephanie without any interference from the posse or Shane. And just good stuff. If you haven't seen this match, it's definitely kind of one of those hidden gems we've talked about in the past. One worth going to check out because it really is good stuff. It's enjoyable.
Mm. I don't think it's on anything though.
It is not according to Graham. It isn't.
Yeah,
just too bad. I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, it's
a
really good stuff, and Test's best match of date, and really a match that made you think, well, maybe this guy's actually going to go somewhere now. Maybe he does have upside as a high level face after seeing him go out here and get the crowd. And I mean, the pop when he wins is great. The crowd goes nuts when he finally knocks off Shane, and a classic overbooked garbage match where both guys just busted ass and with a great storyline and heat, and it just clicked.
Yeah, it did. And it would also prove that just like father, the McMahon family would not do anything that they wouldn't expect their charges to do right. as well. So, if you're going to expect big bumps from your employers, they would expect you, if you could, to do the same. And, Vince has done it, and we would see Vince do more of it over the next few years. And Shane the same way, through his body, off that top rope, onto the announce table. Obviously it didn't help. He'd lose the match, but just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And Shane would do more of that over the next few years. So,
Shane definitely used well in-ring at this point. A great mm-hmm. on-screen character, but sporadically in-ring, which mm-hmm. I think made it count more. What was your feeling on Tesso coming out of this? Did you think they were going to... Did you think there was a future now with him?
I thought, I'm not going to lie. I thought he was legitimately set for big things. Not going to lie. I don't know about a world title. Maybe.
We'll get to that, because there was a time where I thought he could have been well used
okay.
in that scenario. We'll get to that in a few weeks or so.
But I definitely thought he was a player at this point. Yeah, I definitely think so. And a good match.
Very good match. Definitely one I recommend checking out. I watched it. Like I said, I watched it again today. It definitely holds up. Cool story. And just a fun 12-minute. I mean, no kind of five-star classic, but it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. So there you go. Test gets the the woman he loves, and the evil, jealous brother has to sit back and let it happen. And it does. It doesn't just end here. Fortunately, the whole thing with Stephanie and Test continues, and we'll get there.
Yep.
Next up, yop. Next, another title match. This time, the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships on the line. When your champions, and we mention them Monday night.
It's gotta be Kane.
Yes, him and
X-Pac.
Little guy, big guy, best friend combo. X-Pac and Kane, your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. Who, of
I kind of wish that's how they always announce them. Little man, big man, best friend combo.
Exactly, yes. I think it wouldn't be Howard. Little man, best friend combo. they, of course, won the titles from the Acolytes Monday night on Raw. Now, taking on not exactly best friends, but a very
something you order at McDonald's. I'll have the little man, big man, or at a Chinese restaurant. Little big, little man, big man, best friend combo, please.
You want best man combo?
I'll have the triple happiness.
Triple dragon and prawn.
The four seasons.
Can I have love and family?
Double pleasures.
Double. Hey, whoa. No GTV here.
The Prince Albert's.
again, he did it to me again. It's the second time tonight. First time was the awesome Shamrock. Now I can't get a vision out of my head of Shamrock in Frank Sinatra hair and a tuxedo.
You've got to be kidding me.
I am not. I think that would be great. Let's talk about this. We talked a little about this combo. And no, not the happy man, little man combo. But this, our other.
I'm number 13. What's that? The big man, little man, happy, best friend combo.
Best friend combo.
No MSG.
No MSG. Alternate tights. Yes, please. team we talked about, because they've kind of been teaming together over the last few weeks. And that is the team of The Undertaker and The Big Show, called The Unholy Alliance. I did like this combo a lot. I really did.
Yep. Best used to Big Show so far, easily.
Yes. Yes. Taker's a mentor, or Taker's a student. And I remember the motorcycle trip in the desert. You know, Taker says Show only had enough gas to make it into the desert. Oh.
Armageddon Show.
You know, that shit was legit. And I know we always bust on it for, you know, inside reasons, but it, they really did that stuff, the Armageddon stuff. They really talked about it a lot.
Yep, they did. They did. I agree. Does Taker set the wrestling record for most different theme entrance themes
he's up there in one calendar year? Yeah.
That was like his fifth since January.
They're all awesome.
Yes, they are all awesome. And of course, they get the number one contender slot here.
Yeah,
they take on X-Pac and Kane.
They've really been at each other's throats. I mean, X-Pac, as we talked about, cost Undertaker the first blood match at Fully Loaded. Then Taker busted his neck up, gave him a concussion on Raw, so he was out for a few weeks, came back, and they Taker and Show beat the piss out of X-Pac and Kane on the August 9th Raw after they won the tag titles, and that led to this one here. So, yeah, I thought this was... pretty well done. The next week, on the 16th, X-Pac and Kane fought the Acolytes, but Show and Taker came out and got involved there as well. So things really set up nicely. The Acolytes really softened up the champs for Taker and Show as well. So I thought it was a really well-done feud heading in. I thought there was a lot of heat on the Unholy Alliance and a lot of sympathy with X-Pac and Kane. And we've talked about how he's humanizing Kane. X-Pac is. They become friends. And Kane was doing his best to protect X-Pac, who was banged up. And I thought they had really good chemistry as a team and within this feud. And I liked just seeing Taker as a manipulative piece of shit who just hates everyone. He's just out to fuck with people. And basically, I mean, he's outwardly training Show and using him. He's mentoring him, but he's also using him. You know, he's just whatever. He didn't really care. You could tell he didn't deep down give a shit about him. But just good stuff. I liked this whole angle. I really did.
I did too. And this is easily Taker's best match of the year. I mean, I didn't mind the match with Austin at Fully Loaded. It wasn't
really
terrible.
You think this is better? Well, I mean,
I
like
this match.
Yeah, well, I like it a lot too. But you think it's better than that match, or even the Raw match, the Raw title change?
Well, the Raw match from the night after King of the Ring is awesome.
Yeah,
that might be all right. Maybe that's Taker's best match of the year. The Fully Loaded match is good. I don't know this one. I don't know.
No, it's very good, but it's, I have to watch it again. Not all him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to watch it again. I'll have to pull the DVD out too. Maybe it's because I think X-Pac is in a groove right now.
Oh,
and I think that helps too.
Great at this point, just flying around like a madman.
Yeah,
and the end was interesting because X-Pac actually kicks out of the choke slam for Big Show, which was huge. I mean, X-Pac is getting a major push at this point, really hanging in with the big boys. Taker gets pissed, sneers at Show, tags himself in, tombstones X-Pac, and wins the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
Taker, again, not pleased. That's been the theme here. No matter what Big Show does to, you know, trying to impress his boss, it never is good enough. Taker is always pissed at him and, you know, staring him down and trying to get him to be better. And so even though they win the tag belts, he's just not happy with Big Show at all. So as they leave the ring, he lets him have it. You know, Kane and X-Pac, I thought, were great tag champions, but I've actually thought the belts needed to be more on Taker and Show here to push along that storyline of Taker trying to develop Show into a force. I thought putting the belts on them actually made a little bit of sense. X-Pac and Kane were so over, they didn't really need it. They could be used as transitional champions. And as much as the tag titles were hot potatoed over the summer, since Jarrett and Owen lost them in April, I thought it's actually been a good stretch for the belts because a lot of these teams have been shown to be even. Outside of the fluky Hardys win, I thought the title switches actually made sense throughout the year.
Yes, absolutely. And as I said earlier, the division as a whole is really starting to come into shape. And I'm really glad that we're one of the great reasons why I love doing this show with you, for among many. But one of them is it gives us a chance to really get back to these shows and think about opinions and debates about things that we thought a blanket opinion would be it was bad. Like, oh, God, nobody cared about the tag division during the Attitude Era. Well, now that we're really delving deep, the tag division was a priority, more than people remember, I think. And I hope that when you're listening to this, PTB Nation, you remember that now. You'll listen to us and go, yeah, you know, you're right. There was a solid 6-7 teams, including these guys, that were really good. And
the titles aren't in the main event scene. You know, sometimes you get the belts on a team that's like, oh, man, this team is going to dominate everyone. Mm-hmm. Taker and Show were kind of in that next level down at this point. Even though Taker had just been champion, I didn't feel like they were, like, shoved into the main event with these titles.
Right. I agree. Yeah, I agree. And, it worked out. And The Undertaker and The Big Show are your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. And the best thing about Kane debuted those swift, awesome alternate tights where instead of red base, black stripes, it was the reverse.
Right.
Black base with red. And it was awesome. And he would only wear that once in a while. So it was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they would lose. And Taker and Big Show, the Unholy Alliance, complete with ninth entrance theme, which is equally as awesome as the other eight, are your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. Taker's first title reign in a year. But again, unlike the one in 98, which was nothing more than a, you know, holdover storyline thing for their match at SummerSlam between him and Austin, this was a legitimate, you know, title win that would propel both of them and help both of them out, particularly Big Show, who, of course, as we've been documenting, has been floating around aimlessly in no man's land, and we don't know what he's doing or what's going on. So, good match. Good match. Do I think it's better than his match with Austin Fully Loaded? I don't know. But I think Taker's best match of the year was his match with Austin the night after King of the Ring when Steve won the belt back. I think that's Taker's best match. But clearly, even though this is a good match for Taker, he still definitely needs some healing time. He's still limping around, and he had Show do a lot of the work, but it's still made for a great match. And we will talk about Taker at our next show. So, why don't we take a breather? digest the combo. And when we return, two matches left.
I'm hungry again.
Two matches left. We have a very unusual match to try and prove someone deserves to be a main eventer. And, of course, our World Wrestling Federation Championship match, which is a very complicated, convoluted, and turns it, you know, switches at every corner storyline, which we will talk about coming up next. However, a spell. Because?
Grey Goose.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get you all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, twfnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at twfnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. If you're not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
There's not many on. I'm looking forward to everything.
And we are back, PTB Nation. Hope you're enjoying this review here of the SummerSlam 1999 edition of the SummerSlam. We have two matches left. It's been an interesting card thus far.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Really, if you think about it, match for match, it's really been pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
Haven't had many slow points. Next up, I guess you can call this one the co-main event. Because one big guy that we haven't discussed yet on this card is The Rock, who is just, at this point now, he is, I don't want to say he's out-popped Austin, but some nights, some moments, he might have. But
I think it's arguable.
Yeah. I mean, he's a beast right now.
Yeah.
With the
kind of pushed into a weird little feud, though.
Yes. And he takes on
I'm a nice man.
Yes, him. Because
fuck him.
He had to be proven on a big stage against a big opponent.
Yeah.
And this was it. We'll get into what I thought of where Rock belonged on this show a little bit later. This was a kiss my ass match.
I haven't seen one of these since SummerSlam 97.
Yes. 1 year. I mean, if Rock lost...
2 years.
2 years, I mean. He would be forced to kiss Billy's ass. However, Mr. Sop had a trick up his sleeve. As he ushered in a big, large, Rosati sister-esque lady with him to the ring and let everyone know that if Rock lost, he would have to kiss her ass and not his. How disappointing.
What did you think of at the time, if you can remember back? Did you think this was a believable spot? Were you still, remember, as we talked about, I was still the mindset that everything they were touching was gold. So I really still thought they could make this work. And to me, if there was, I thought this was it may seem like a weird use of The Rock, but I actually thought it was a pretty good use of him, because if you can't get over in a match with The Rock at this point, then you got some trouble. And this is really the first time Billy's expected to go out there in a big time match, control the majority of the match, build heat, and, you know, be successful to a comeback. And I thought he did an okay job. I didn't think this was that bad of a match. I feel like he gets crapped on because everyone kind of knows where Billy Gunn goes after this. But I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. I did. And unfortunately, it pretty much was is the end of Billy Gunn's solo run. So this whole Mr. Ass shit that started back in May, he had the summer to kind of prove himself, and now here pretty much put out of his misery as far as this role goes. And, of course, be back in a familiar role by the time we get to our next show, or shortly afterwards anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think of Billy's performance here?
It's average, just like everything else. I was not sold on it at that point, and I would have to say that Rock was a trooper for kind of giving up what might have been his shot maybe at the next match, which we'll get to in a minute, just to prove to everyone that Billy Gunn was a toolbox and didn't belong here.
Do you think they botched the Billy push from day one, and I'm talking about back in January?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think they should have done it more organically? Like, they kind of start and stop it. He's a face going for the singles title, and then he ends up back in a tag team, turns on him, then he becomes a heel, but he doesn't really get established again before he just is all of a sudden up on the highest level, King of the Ring with The Rock and all this other stuff. And do you think it would have been better if he was a tag team, turned on Dog, did those feuds for the title as a heel, and then kind of climbed up the card, won King of the Ring coming off like an IC title run? I mean, look at the guys who were champion at that point, your Godfather, Goldust. I mean, you could have given Billy Gunn the title at that point and let him kind of run with it leading into King of the Ring. Do you think maybe that would have helped him a little bit, or do you think it was just this was his destiny just to fail?
Maybe if they had set it up a little bit better for him to have some more time, maybe. But I feel like they had to make him King of the Ring or else everything was a failure. And then at that point, you can't shunt him any lower. He was going to have to get something at this show with some teeth. And that's why, again, Rock has to kind of bite the bullet.
Yeah.
And prove to everyone that, you know, this guy's a schmuck and doesn't belong here.
I mean, it wasn't bad either, though, for Rock, because you had to keep him busy somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You were using this time to elevate other people. You knew he'd be back up in the title picture soon enough, but you really needed to keep him busy a little bit.
Yes.
And using him to try and get over another guy really isn't the worst choice.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he's the easy one to do it to. And over time, Rock would end up becoming one of the most valuable in this position, if you know what I mean. He was the best one to have to do kind of the greater good moves on big shows. It didn't fit with anybody else. Austin couldn't pull it off. Other baby faces, the Shawns and that kind of stuff. Rock will always be known as one of the best guys to bite the bullet and maybe get stuck doing something he doesn't want to do. or get stuck at something that many would consider beneath him. And Rock never totally always thinks that way. That's, you know, he's never been that kind of guy, but he needed to here because everybody else was busy. So we got the job done. He defeats Billy Gunn.
Well, we get a little twist at the end, of course. Before the match is even over, Billy has Rock laid out. He invites the large lady into the ring, and bends her over in the corner. He goes to put Rock's face, and Rock is able to turn things around and shove Billy's face. And as Jim Ross iconically would say, "By God, the Rock has shoved Billy Gunn's head in that large woman's ass."
Yes. Yes.
Iconic line there. He's like, did I just say that? And then Rock hits the Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow, and that is it for Mr. Gunn. So Rock needed to win here. I'm not advocating any way that Billy should have went over.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think maybe, I don't know. I don't think it was as bad as it seemed. I think maybe they could have gave Billy another month or so to try and continue to get over. But I guess this wasn't meant to be at this point.
No. Again, I think he went a little, you know, he was pushed a little too hard. And really, his in-ring is just not, it's not meant to be singles guy. I'm sorry. It's not. He's a tag team guy. He's a hot tag and, you know, big face sequence in a tag match and, you know, quick, you know, promos that don't require too much thought. That's what he's good at. Anything above that, it's a little over his head. It's just the way it is. So this is it. This is pretty much the end of that after this. The experiment officially failed. Now, have they cared before? No, they've had failed King of the Ring winners. You know, Mabel, of course, comes to mind the most. At this point, getting back to a guy earlier, JR, we were talking about King of the Ring winners. Now that he's officially gone, was Shamrock the okay pick in 98?
Yeah.
Did it turn out okay, you think?
Yeah, because the only other guy you could maybe say should have gotten it was Rock, but his year went fine anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would have really benefited that much. Shamrock ended up having a very good year, the heel run, the IC title. So I think he was a fine choice. I don't know who else you really would have given it to, and they needed to kind of reestablish it with a face anyway. You know, he had, he was the first face since Brett had won, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. The Rock dispatches a failed experiment and moves on. He's got bigger fish to fry. And now,
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Vincent motherfucking Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan WCW Rob Houston YMCA Memorial update. August 1st, 1999 in Battle Creek, Michigan. What the fuck? Kellogg Arena. Jim Duggan defeated Kurt Hennig by disqualification. Jim Duggan defeated Disco Inferno in Cedar Rapids, Iowa on August 4th. Jim Duggan defeated Dave Taylor, making his debut on Amarillo, Texas on April 18th or August 18th. And that's it for Duggan. Scott, what are we talking about tonight? What show?
SummerSlam 99.
So when was that? Was that the Brain Busters and the Twin Towers for the tag titles?
No, that was 89.
Oh, so wait, who's in this one?
This is when you brought back.
Who's on the cover of the tape?
Stone Cold and a skull. All
right, where was this one from?
Minnesota.
Oh, I remember that night, Griscolo.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, right?
No, you were not.
You know why? I was out in the log cabin visiting Coach Hayden Fox. A dream come true.
That's right.
I showed up banging on his window. I was like, da 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 da. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, oh, jeez, Luth. And then Anthony Armento drove me into a fucking tree, and I had to get out there, and Dauber's trying to fix the fucking tire on the car with Mark Claire. They're trying to jack the fucking car up, and then Rotella's under there. We had to use his shirt to tie the thing tight. Armento fucking got us all lost through the lakes of Minnesota. We ended up at Mike Wilkinson's house. I don't know what the fuck was going on. It was a fucking crazy night. Christine Armstrong was interviewing us. Howard Burley at his theater group game. It was fucking crazy.
Were they mimes? Or clowns or something?
That was my son-in-law, Stuart.
Yes. Mimes are
crying. I may or may not have wrote quite a bit of Coach fan fiction, Chris Golo.
Oh, there you go. Hey.
A lot of alternate realities where Luther marries Christine. Hayden coaches the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes, indeed.
Dauber comes out of the closet, dates Howard. All kinds of crazy shit.
Then there's the secretary, what her name was, the one that was across the hall.
Ah, you got me on that one.
Yeah, the secretary.
And then Mota comes in the last season, her and Tony Danza.
That's right, yep.
And I was singing, hold me closer, Tony Danza.
So what you're saying is Hayden Fox could have been the coach of an XFL team soon.
Hayden Fox should have been a life coach. I tried to bring him in as a coach in 1991. He wouldn't accept the role. I'd have called that scrub John Tolos instead.
Hayden Fox managing Mr. Perfect? That would have been a great idea, Vince.
Of course it would have been. I came up with it. Everything I come up with is a great idea.
Mm. So let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Does Claire have any whores in the back of the...
Claire? Back of the whores? That's how we roll, bitch!
That's what I thought.
Scott, I hear you having trouble down at the Knights of Columbus precinct.
Yeah, I tell you.
You need me to go down there and fuck some bitches up?
I need some help, Vince. God needs to be on my side. However...
I'm good friends with God.
You're going to... I just realized you refused an invitation to your boy Rotella's picnic on Saturday.
Who?
Your boy. Matt Rotellus and his picnic.
He's having a picnic?
Yeah.
I wasn't invited.
You better... He's in the back seat.
That fucking asshole. Rotella! You're having a party? You didn't invite me? What? Wake up. Stand up straight if you can. Why wasn't I invited? What do you mean you're embarrassed? I'm your boss. Is Armento going?
No, Armento is not going.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking Rotella. Hang on. Is he wearing the members-only jacket? Is he bringing his Rogaine? No? All right. I may come late. I'll bring a veggie tray. All right. All right, I'll see you there, Chris Golo. Eat that pussy right in the meantime.
All right, Vinny.
Let's go, Claire. Doesn't sound happy.
Oh, I can't believe he didn't get invited. Lumpy bastard. How did he not invite him? Jesus, he pays his fucking bills. He's probably paying for all the food. And the 50 12-packs and wine coolers. Ugh. Unfortunate. All right. Time for the main event. Which did not involve Vince.
Should have.
Is this... You know.
Not.
The World Wrestling Federation... Championship match.
Now China, right, is involved in this?
Yes. At some point she is, yes. Of course your champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's had the belt since the night after King of the Ring, when he defeated The Undertaker and then beat him in the rematch at Fully Loaded in the First Blood. Now here, he was supposed to take on... Why don't we start from the beginning, JR? He was supposed to take on... Yes. He, of course, won the match at Fully Loaded, the strap match with The Rock. So Triple H was finally the number one contender, finally going to get the moment he richly deserved. But unfortunately, things kind of spiraled out of control. Why was that, JR?
Well, we talked about what happened on August 9th. We're not going to go over it again. If you want to hear it, go back and listen. Go back and listen. And you can see why things got befuddled and fucked up. So here on August 5th, 16th now, your number one contender is China. So we're set to have China versus Steve Austin at SummerSlam. August 16th opened up. Triple H comes out and he basically says, this is bullshit. I want a shot back at my title. It was my number one contender slot. I fought for years. I busted my ass and now you screwed me. Calls her an ungrateful bitch. I'm taking back what's mine. And he actually ends up talking China into the match.
So him and China will now face off to determine who will be the number one contender. So I think everyone saw where this was going, right? Obvious stuff. 3 minutes into that match, Mankind returns. Now, we haven't seen him since May when Triple H busted his knee up with a sledgehammer. Comes out, attacks Triple H, and helps China win. So China's still number one contender. So now you're like, all right, something's really going on. What's going on here? Excuse me, my voice is bothering me for some reason. So all that, China's still the number one contender. Mankind begs China for a shot at the match, and he says there's always been vague sexual tension between the two of them. China refuses, but now Commissioner Michael shows back up and says she will defend against Mankind later in the night. And due to the distraction from Triple H, Mankind won the title shot from China. So now we're back to a singles match with two men, and this time it's Mankind and Steve Austin. So now we get a brawl between Mankind and Triple H. And somehow, thanks to Shane McMahon and a bunch of other confusion, we end up with another number one contender match between Triple H and Mankind. So now you're assuming, okay, Triple H will win, and now we're back to where we started. 2 week time. You know, 2 weeks of nonsense just to get back to where we were. No. We get the old double pin with the back suplex deal. Both refs count a pin because we had Sean and Shane McMahon were the dual referees. And now we have two winners, and they end up declaring that they would both go on to SummerSlam, and we now have a triple threat match with Jesse Ventura as a referee. So the new main event that started is Steve Austin versus Triple H, went to Steve Austin versus China, to Steve Austin China again, to Steve Austin Mankind, is now Steve Austin, Triple H, Mankind, Jesse Ventura in the mix. And here we are.
Before we get to the match itself, well, do you want to talk about Jesse before we get to this part?
Well, we talked about him a lot on the August 9th. Okay. I don't want to repeat stuff. I mean, he came.
Well,
in.
Did we mention the whole? It was a
I think we vaguely mentioned. We can throw it again. So the day of the show here, Jesse was all geared up to get involved and do whatever he had to do. The day of the show, Jesse showed up. He was kind of in a pissy mood and revealed that he'd been told he could not get involved in the match physically. They didn't know if they were going to have to make him an outside ref or what was going to happen. And, you know, the three competitors were hoping to have Jesse be involved. The 11th hour, Jesse busts into the locker room and told the wrestlers he changed his mind. He couldn't give a shit less about popular opinion. He'd do whatever he wanted them to do. And that kind of saved things a little bit because Jesse got to be more involved in the action, as we'll see.
He got to be Jesse.
Yeah, he got to definitely get physically involved more. So that was good to see as well. That added a lot to the match.
Yes. And this would, of course, be the 11-year anniversary of the last time he was a special referee in a match at SummerSlam, and that was way back in 1988 when he was the special referee for the Mega Powers and the Mega Bucks at SummerSlam 1988. Wearing very different clothes. Then he had on, what did he have, the black jeans, the do-rag, and he was reffing a great match, and poor Gorilla and the dumbass Billy Graham ripped the poor guy to shreds, and he actually wasn't a bad referee.
No, not at all.
This time around, he was definitely calling it down the middle.
Yep.
Okay. I'm having...
Hot flashes?
No. How do I word this? I'm not sure what to make of this whole jumbling up of this match. Because I'm kind of torn. I'm kind of devil's advocating myself here. Because on the one hand, It was fun for 2 weeks to kind of make some type of, you know, make everything a surprise and all these twists and turns and all these shocks and, oh my God, fighting China? What? Steve Austin in China? And then Foley comes out of nowhere. And in that sense, I enjoyed the fact that there was a lot of surprises and twists and turns and things like that. On the other hand, when you're talking about one of your biggest shows of the year, the second biggest show of the year, I don't like dicking around the main event. You need to make that rock solid, and you could dick around everything else. I'm not. It's weird. I believe in both sides here. At first, I didn't, but as I've been thinking about the last couple of days preparing for tonight's show, I've been kind of up and down.
Oh my God!
About what to do.
Paul George,
mm-hmm.
Indiana down three. They've been leading most of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Down three with about a second and a half left.
Mm-hmm.
just hit a fucking three from way behind the arc, like with two guys at his face, just threw it up and swished it.
Nice.
And that was 0.7 seconds left, so it looks like we're going overtime. Amazing.
Nice.
Amazing ballsy shot.
Ugh.
Actually, there was one guy in his, kind of in his face, but it was deep as hell, this three.
I'm a big Frank Vogel guy. I really want to see the Pacers here.
Okay. Sorry.
I know they don't have the pure talent, but...
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt because I know.
No. I thought I said something.
Pick it back up.
Oh my God, make up your mind. No. So that's why I'm torn. I'm curious your opinion, and I'm actually curious PTB Nation's opinion when we get to the feedback. Was it okay to tinker with the main event of the second biggest show of the year for the sake of good television, or should they have gone old school?
I think that has to be more.
Put the main event, leave it alone, and then dick around with everything else.
I think there has to be more to it than that. Like, why would they put Mankind in this match? Randy, this is a mark it down. One of the Kevin questions. Why put him in here? And then as we'll get to the result, even more confounding. I thought for what they were trying to do, with Triple H and the way they were trying to build him and make him a mega heel, I don't get why you fucked with this. I don't get why you wouldn't have him go in here and just win the title and go over Austin. And why you're going to convolute it with three men and everything else. Now, if you're looking at it pragmatically, maybe you say, well, you got the governor of Minnesota. You're going to get a lot of mainstream coverage. Do you really want your top heel being the guy raising the belt and him holding his hand, right? You want one of your mainstream top faces, which is fine. So you would think, all right, it'll be Steve Austin. No, they end up having Mankind pin Austin, which is even more bizarre to me, because Mankind's out there in sweatpants and white socks and sneakers and looking like an idiot. And I know he had some mainstream acceptance at this point. I know the book wasn't out yet, but he at least had been in a lot of commercials and he was pretty well known. But still, odd choice. I mean, do you think they beat Austin too much at this point?
What do you mean, beat Austin too much?
It seems like he loses a lot. To me, anyway.
Well, I mean...
Like, this guy's your franchise, your main player, and he's had three shitty title reigns. You know, it's like, he just won this one back in June. Didn't really do too much on TV. I know he was kind of banged up, but...
The only one that I think we talk about it when we talked about those vaults. The only one that I thought was dumb was when Kane beat him at King of the Ring 98. That's the only one that I thought was stupid.
I mean, has he really had a good title reign yet?
I thought the first one was fine. From 14 to King of the Ring 98.
Yeah, but
that was
so short.
And he really
That was it.
Yeah, but the meat and potatoes of it was fine. It just ended prematurely because for a day. See, I almost think that first reign is really one reign minus a day. From WrestleMania till he loses a breakdown, it's pretty much one reign, except for that stupid, you know, except for what happens at King of the Ring, which I still think is dumb. He lost back to back. I mean, he did lose back to back pay per view matches, but he did win three in a row. I mean, he won after getting screwed at the Rumble. He did win three pay per view matches.
I know he wins
a
lot. I know he wins a lot.
Right.
This seems like he gets pinned a lot. I mean, he basically just got pinned by a DDT from Mankind here. Mankind hadn't been on TV since May. This is his second match back. It just seemed kind of weird. It almost seemed like they were, I don't know, just... If you're going to do the triple threat thing, I mean, I get why they didn't want Triple A. I don't know. The whole thing just seemed like they were booked into a corner because of Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why they didn't want Triple H to be the last guy standing. I get why they couldn't beat Triple H. So I guess your only way out... Unless you do have Austin beat Mankind. I mean, to me, that seems like the most logical. And then you go into the next night and do what you had to do. But I don't know. It's kind of weird to me. Like, it seemed like Austin was almost an afterthought here. Somehow Mankind came back after being dormant in the main event scene since February. Mm-hmm. Comes back and almost feels like he's shoved back past Austin into the consciousness of the main event scene.
Yeah.
Well, even at the end, Mankind walks off with the title and Triple H just beats the piss out of Austin with a chair.
Yeah. For our benefit, really the only guy that can really help us answer this question is Kevin. And, of course, we'll have him on. And
I know part of it is because Austin was hurting. I do. I know that was a big piece of things.
Yep. Yep.
And they needed to get him off. But I don't know why you don't have Triple H go over him here and just suck it up with Jesse and whatever. Have Austin, I don't know, stand tall at the end anyway. Triple H leaves. I don't know. If that's even the reason, we might be making that up. I have no idea.
I don't either.
It just seemed like really convoluted to me. I don't know if it's a Russo swerve for the sake of a swerve or what the reasoning was, but to me it just made no sense.
It's a great match.
Oh, it's a really good match.
It's a tremendous match.
Yeah. And Jesse does the whole thing where Triple H uses the sledgehammer and you know, Jesse refuses to count and Triple H gets all pissed at him, and it really built, I thought it added more, like we talked about Monday night, it added a lot more to the Triple H's angry and pissed off stuff. Like, now you're fucking me again, you know, now you're screwing with me even more.
Yeah. And then you know, Austin wins and he gets the shit beat out of him at the end. Highlight of the night, though, of the match is when Jesse throws Shane over the top rope when he tries to get involved, and he screams out, "That was for your old man, you little bastard."
Yeah, that was a good,
that was a great line.
I like how Jesse was carrying this feud with Vince if Vince wasn't even around.
I know, it was awesome.
Yeah, I thought Jesse was good here. I thought he definitely added some importance, some intrigue. I thought throughout this whole feud and especially here as well. I liked in the back earlier they kept showing him going to all the different competitors. And warning them that they had to play by his rules. And I like Austin just blows him off and he like chases after him. He's like, "Where you going? I'm trying to talk to you." So I thought that was good stuff. And, you know, I guess if screwing Triple H here kind of added more to his anger, but the fact that they played out the next night to me kind of takes back away from that. Like if he would have built it for another month where he got screwed here and he could build into that, he keeps getting fucked over by everyone. But to me, they didn't really give enough time to play that story up.
Right. Right. Yeah, unfortunately, JR, I think a lot of our questions, for our benefit, the one guy that probably has the best answers, if he can, is Kevin.
Yeah, I'm really curious on this one. I'm really curious how Mick ended up. And I know he talks about his book. I can't fully recall everything. I remember the stuff with Jesse getting involved from his book.
Right.
But I can't really remember what the reasoning was. I know the story, the rumor out there at the time was always that Austin refused to drop the Triple H. And that was definitely prevalent even like on that day, because I remember having read about it. And then when we saw the finish, Jim and I thought for sure that that's what happened. We're like, "Oh, wow, he must have really just refused to fucking lose to him. Why else would they do this?" I remember just being shocked. The finish comes out of nowhere. Like, I remember sitting there like, "What the fuck?" Like, and then they kind of cut quick when Mankind just leaves with Jesse and then they do the beatdown. But I definitely remember being surprised at the finish of this match. I was definitely caught off guard. I did not expect Mankind to win.
I was actually
like
pretty angry because obviously I was, you know, pumped for the big moment of my guy being champion for the first time. And it was weird. It was very weird. Yeah. Again, we'll get our best answers from Kevin when we have him back on in probably about a month.
All right. So quick thoughts on the show.
The show's awesome. Highly recommend it. I don't know how much the DVD is because it's only, you know, obviously if you have the cooler, then that's cool. However, you know, if you want to get the single DVD, it was one of the first ones that came out in 99. I'm sure you probably can't get it cheap. I'm sure you're going to have to pay a little bit. I don't even think the title matches anywhere.
I don't think anything is. Yeah.
I don't think anything is, which kind of sucks. But
the opener is on the Attitude Era DVD.
What? Oh, the D-Lo? Really? Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, try and find the show. Maybe somebody has it. Maybe it's on YouTube or Daily Motion or something. But it's a good show. I mean, there's at least five really good matches. There's not many stinkers. You know, maybe the women's matches. And again, if you're a Shammy fan like my PIC, you know, you can say a little eulogy and have the vision of, you know, the rat pack, the sham pack of, you know, Shamrock there playing pool with, you know, Sammy and Dean. But yeah, highly recommend it. Would you consider it top to bottom the best show of the year? So far?
I don't know. I got to kind of reanalyze. I said I liked Philly Loaded a lot, and I like Valentine's Day Massacre. It's definitely up there. I mean, it blows WrestleMania away.
Yeah, it does.
You have some good matches. You have you know, pretty good booking other than the main event. I thought everything was booked pretty basic and to the point. Tess Shane was really fun. I like the tag title match, and the main event, of course, is very good as well. So, yeah thumbs up here. Let's quickly get to the feedback, Scott, because we forgot to read the Raw one on Monday.
Yeah.
And so now we owe it here. But again, if you guys go match by match, result by result, we're just going to skip it. So I'll kick us off with Steve Riddle. SummerSlam 99 is a pretty good show. Opener was solid. Jarrett Neville's two titles. D'Lo screwed by his friend. The turmoil is pretty good. Acolytes are in the title shot. Road Dogg attempts to issue a challenge, only to be interrupted by Jericho. Snow Boss Man, good brawl. Women's title match is abysmal. Lion's Den was good. Shamrock gets a win in his final pay-per-view match. Greenwich Street Fight's a hidden gem. Tag title match was very good. Taker and Show win the tag titles. Kiss My Ass, decent affair. Billy Gunn's main event aspirations are put to bed. Main event was a lot of fun. It was awesome seeing Jesse back in the fold. Overall, it's actually a better SummerSlam than I think many remember and continues the red-hot year of 99.
Dennis Nunez. I want to like this show, but I can't. The undercard is fine and the test for Shane match is excellent, but there is no way the show is going to live up to last year's all-time classic. What a mess the main event build to this show was. Austin goes from facing Triple H to China to Triple H to Mankind and now to Mankind and Triple H. Damn it, Russo. You've been yelled a lot at the TV tapings. Having Jesse as the ref was a great touch as well. That's right for your old man, you little bat. Yes, I could. I couldn't help to think the Hunter was supposed to win the belt this night, but Russo decided to be Russo again and put it for the next night on Raw to pop a rating. There's a lot of steak to this show, but no sizzle. If it had both, it'd be a top five SummerSlam.
Hmm. Jay Henshey, SummerSlam 9 is the best pay-per-view of the year, hands down. It took place 2 days before my birthday. Good on a card with D'Lo Jarrett. Tag team turmoil debuts, and it's pretty fun with Edge and Christian almost running the table. Hardcore title bout is another fun one between Snow and Bull. Boss Man, they go across the street to the bar. I think Dog was supposed to be in the match, but was taken out the last minute. I'm not sure about that, but maybe. Women's title is nothing, although Tori almost loses her top. Lion's Den with Shamrock Blackman, who's good in the last hurrah for Ken. Greenwich Street Fight's a hidden gem. Posse did, added to things, so did the returning Patterson and Briscoe. Tag title match is another good one. I like the storyline of X-Pac competing in the Land of Giants. Rock and Mr. Ass have an entertaining match. Billy Gunn is getting his face shoved in the large woman's ass as a sight. Main event's a good one. Surprise winner, Mankind. Jesse's a good referee. I loved him throwing Shane out of the ring and yelling. Overall, a fun SummerSlam in the Twin Cities and now an interesting fall.
Okay. Sean Zern. Hey, guys. This was during the time when I wasn't watching so much. Don't hear that very often from somebody. Austin and Rock had my attention, but why, oh, why was Billy Gunn facing The Rock? I think it hurt Gunn to go up against The Rock. The Rock was super popular right now, and Gunn was on his way up, so it didn't make sense for this match to happen. Either way, an interesting event. Glad to see Jesse back.
Dragon Rockwell. Another very good SummerSlam that could have been even better if not for some odd booking. Mid-card's pretty good. D'Lo would show he's at the top of his game, and the hardcore match was another fun brawl. The bookers should have just let Edge and Christian versus the Hardys have their excellent match and be a standalone rather than lose it in the turmoil. In saying that, it's nice to see draws one last time. Shamrock would say goodbye and for a good, fun match in the Lion's Den. Shane did an excellent job putting Test over, giving the fans reasons to care about him. Unholy Alliance claimed that SummerSlam was now Armageddon in the build-up to this match. They'd wait 4 months for that particular event, but they put on a very good title match here. It's now time for Taker to have a holiday. Having Mr. Ass in the main event level match with Rock was an awful idea. Not even Dwayne could carry Rockabilly here. Thankfully, Vince put a screeching halt to this push after this debacle. The main event's a hot triple threat match. It's great to see Jesse back after 9 years. However, Austin's clear refusal to put Triple H over was incredibly obvious, and the finish looked sloppy. The crowd didn't even seem to care about Foley winning. It just seemed that he had no reason to even be in the title picture. Action's the next night on Raw show that Mick was only given the belt and did not want to drop the strap directly to the game. All in all, a forgotten gem of SummerSlam with better booking of the last two matches. It wouldn't be forgotten.
Guess who's back?
Guess who's back?
Our man, Safazio DeFazio. He actually adds some exclamation points.
Yeah, not bad.
Did you miss me, baby? I'm back finally. I have to say this. I thought Jeff Jarrett was going to get the WWE title at some point, but the events that took place after that, well, did not go well, did it? Guess not. Always pay-per-view streak was kind of alive because I didn't see this live. I saw the repeat at 12, so no chips this time. At this point, we moved into our new home right when the pilot episode of the show took place. We'll talk about that. So I got to see Backlash all the way to Fully Loaded, so it was tough heading into back to school in grade 7. The show was everything I had hoped for and more from the opener with Jarrett, even that street fight with what's-his-name. Test anyways. I also got to see my bros, Fave, have his last WWF pay-per-view match ever his name. Ken Shamrock and Alliance, that match, cool. And everything was amazing. And yes, Mick winning title was the icing on the cake, and Triple H looked good in this match. It started the Austin Hunter feud, and going into our next show, it's going to make Fall Brawl 99 look like an after-school PBS special.
Corey Ferreira goes match by match here. Let's give some quick thoughts. Opener, nice match. Both mid-card titles on the line. Tag title, tag team turmoil. Starts off well, fails, falls bad quickly. In the end, Bradshaw and Farouk win. Some good chemistry from the Hardys and Edge and Christian. Hardcore title match was too long. Nothing should take 17 minutes. It was cool them going to the bar, but it was just too long. Ivory Tory, fucking awful. Shamrock Boss Man, pumped for this, but again, didn't feel like it lived up to the hype. Maybe they should have done a legit MMA fight. Test Shane. Shane's back wrestling the posse on the couch. Test is wrestling to keep his relationship with Stephanie. Considering the work rate of both these men, this is surprisingly good. Taker, Show, Kane, X-Pac. The mystery's all but dead now. Taker has a new buddy. It's odd because Taker seems to be subtly changing his appearance again. This is okay when we get new tag team champs. The teaming of Show and Taker is weird. Rock and Mr. Ass. How did Billy winning the King of the Ring go for him? It all ended with a loss to The Rock. There goes Summer's big push for the next star, dead to a loss. Only good thing come out of this was Rock's promo, Billy's talk with God. Main event, the body is back. Jesse comes back after 9 fucking years on Raw. And everything God, I'm marking out so hard right now. Anyway, the bill for this was a mess. At one point, China was the number one contender. The match was okay, bringing Foley back so they can have Jesse raise the hand of a babyface's BS after they push Hunter so hard. Whole Foley thing really pisses me off. And here are the Meltzer ratings. 2.25 for the opener, and then the next 5 are for the turmoil. 3.25, half star, 2, 1.75, quarter of a star, 2.5 for Snow and Boss Man. -2 for the women. Star and a quarter for Shamrock Blackman. 3.5 for Tess Shane. 2.5 for the tag. 2.75 for Rock Mr. Ass. And 2.75 for the main event. So not a lot of love from old Dave in this one.
Interesting. B.A. Meyer. Oof.
Fucking more like C.S. Lewis.
The Lion, the Witch, and the AWA.
Oh, my Lord.
After the fall of the AWA, the Twin Cities metro area was wrestling starved. Growing up in Minnesota, I would always hear the local folks talk about all of their favorite AWA legends. Minnesota's tradition rich for wrestling, giving us legends such as Vern Gagne, Kurt Hennig, Ravishing Rick Rude, and of course Scott's love interests, Ric Flair and the Road Warriors. I apologize if this feedback is lengthier than my normal post, but the truth is, I was there!
There we go.
When WWE decided to add a pay-per-view every month to their calendar in 1995, I was overjoyed. I was thinking certainly they'll come to the Target Center in Minneapolis. After 2 years of seeing in-your-house pay-per-views in small venues in 1996 and 1997, needless to say, I was very upset. It wouldn't occur to me until years later that they did that because business was so bad. I wouldn't have known. I was so wrapped up into anything wrestling in the mid-90s. Then the announcement came finally in 1999, bringing a pay-per-view to my home state. Of course, the event sold out really quickly, and I didn't get a ticket. As luck would have it, the Saturday before the show, my dad remarried to his current wife, and the wedding was in the Twin Cities area. I lived 3 hours away southwest of Minneapolis. The morning of my pay-per-view, my dad and I went down to the Metrodome and scalped a ticket. Wow. At the event, we had some controversy. There were many protesters picketing outside of Target Center that afternoon and evening. They were protesting Jesse Ventura's involvement with the event. Of course, as a youngster without a care in the world, myself and many others responded as only our folks our age would respond. DX crotch chops. I do that now. It was chaos because the main entrance to Target Center is basically on a sidewalk. And there was a major busy street right there, so there were people everywhere, both protesters and folks just going to the event itself. I got into the arena, and you could not have put me up any higher, and I easily had one of the worst seats possible. Upper deck, last row. Kitty corner, if you look down the aisle at the entrance and then look up to your left, eventually you might see a young Bam. The seat sucked because it was opposite the Lion's Den cage, and the stage obstructed my view of it for that match. Other than that, I had a smile on my face the entire evening. The crowd was jacked up. I know it was 1999, but still it was unbelievable. I remember annoying someone sitting next to me because I saw the Mark Henry turn in the opening match a mile away and proceeded to pretty much spoil the rest of the evening for the jackass sitting next to me with his stupid Stephanie gave me head sign. Yeah, I thought I was real smart. I was that guy. The crowd loved the Tess Shane match. They exploded for Stone Cold's entrance, and when Jesse said he was proud to be a part of the show, it was definitely a great moment. I have to admit, the one match I couldn't predict was the main event. I thought it was going to be a Triple H night, and Scott was going to, well, okay. Never mind. I didn't know that there was some backstage politics going on. When Foley won, we definitely were happy, but we were not really sure what happened. Then the Triple H beatdown of Austin to close out the show left us saying, what the fuck? Post-show, I walked onto the arena floor and saw from a closer view. I was fortunate to be able to buy a SummerSlam t-shirt and go home extremely happy. Unfortunately, the WWE would not return again for pay-per-view to the Target Center for another 6 years and have not been there since. To put it in perspective, the last time the WWE was here for a pay-per-view, somebody got something. I'll talk about him later. I personally find it a travesty the WWE has only come here twice for pay-per-view ever. Maybe with our new stadium breaking ground soon, we'll get a WrestleMania. I'm not holding my breath on that since Minneapolis seems to be one of those towns that Vince doesn't want the talent to mention that they are there. Never know, I guess. The new stadium has a very unique look. I'm sure the WWE would be able to doll it up and make it wonderful. As for SummerSlam 1999, obviously being there live, I loved it. Watching it again on videotape, it is still a good show. And a better one than most of the Russo crap that we got in 1999. We are definitely wrestling starved here, though, with two perfectly suitable arenas.
Way Ferrari. A fun show, thanks to mainly a pretty good undercard. The Lion's Den match was all right, although the 1 year before with Owen was better. Shamrock gets the win in what would be his final pay-per-view, although he does get involved in a pretty good feud with Jericho that was supposed to lead to Unforgiven. Test and Shane are surprisingly good and probably the best match on the card. Tag title match was good. Really like Show and Taker. Too bad it got cut short not long after this. Billy Gunn experiment comes to the end as he loses to Rock. Didn't really care for the main event. On paper, it looked pretty weak for a SummerSlam main event as Triple H is brand new to the scene and Mankind hadn't been around since his feud with The Rock in February in the title picture. I guess they knew it wasn't exactly the most interesting match either. That's why they added Ventura. The match itself really wasn't that great either. It's just a lot of lethargic half-ass brawling around the ring. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was because he was mad about losing the title, but Austin looks really unmotivated. I think he's just hurt. I thought Triple H's post-match beating on Austin was really good. It helped to make up a bit for the match.
Connor says, SummerSlam 99, in my opinion, the best pay-per-view of 99, with Spring Stampede 99 being the best overall. Really fun show here. Test for Shane, just brilliant from start to finish. Well-booked, hot crowd, made Test look like a star. Jarrett Brown, good. Mark Henry turn made sense. Like the tag team turmoil, first sign of the great tag division we get for the next couple years. Strange that Mankind won. Triple H should have won here, but with Jesse involved, it would have been tough to book. By the way, Jesse was great as always. Nice having back, even if it was for a few months. Also got a nice Wee Jericho cameo. Billy Gunn's push comes to an end, but still a fun, harmless match with The Rock. Few stinkers in there, but still a great show to end the summer of 99. Was interesting to see where a few wrestlers would go from here. Billy, Rock, Austin, Shamrock, Test, Jericho, Jarrett. As it felt like storylines had ended and they needed new feuds. The fall, usually a quiet period to see who they can push for Rumble and Mania, but WWE was red hot. TV was good with a show about to be added. So it was a great summer, an interesting few months ahead, it seems. Can't wait. Best match, Test for Shane. Worst match, Ivory Tory. See this show.
Steve Rogers. Interesting note about the original DVD release. It was the first one done by WWF, and they featured two bonus commentaries, one with Mick and one with Triple H. I want to say they were actually done both with Kevin Kelly, and yes, they were. Anyway, the funny thing about it was that both were treated as if Mankind was still champion or something. I highly doubt they were recorded before the next Raw, but no mention of the title switch in either commentary, which I guess makes sense. I mean,
Corey Mack.
Moment, baby.
Yes. Corey Mack.
Mack.
This SummerSlam feels like a little disjointed to me. Some of the undercard was good, but why not capitalize on Y2J and have him wrestle on the show? Test and Shane was really good, but I never liked adding Mankind to the title match. Overall, a good show, but doesn't come close to the past two SummerSlams.
Dave Hall, this definitely is an out-of-body experience. The SummerSlam again proves to be one of the best cards of the year. From the opener, everyone seemed to work hard and wanted to impress. Jared D'Lo entertaining, tag turmoil started strong, but once Edge and Christian eliminated, it fell apart. We get the usual mid-card slowdown with an average hardcore and slow women's match. Shamrock Blackman struggled to find their flow. I don't know if it was the Lions Den or they just couldn't find a groove. Shane Test was great. Shane again proves he can be very entertaining, and this is certainly Test's best pay-per-view outing since joining the company. Taker and Show have an acceptable match with Kane and Pac. X-Pac certainly carried it, and Show and Taker seemed out of place in this spot. The Rock tries to carry Mr. Sloppy Ass, but sadly Billy just isn't up to it, up to Rock's level. At least Vince didn't have Billy go over here. Finally, the main event was really good. While Austin and Mankind were struggling with injuries, Triple H is the machine. Jesse makes his welcome return to the company, seals the show. Not sure why Triple H didn't go over here, especially as Austin needed time off, whether it's politics or something else, but Mankind just seemed out of place. Overall, an enjoyable event. Just wish we saw more of Jesse after this.
And a newcomer, just his third post. We will call him Stevie G. Recently able to watch this with my six-day-old son. Oh, that's nice. And they're sleeping in my lap. Air sleeping in my lap. I found this to be a great show with three matches that surprised me. The tag turmoil was not the joke of a match that it becomes in the future and told a great underdog story in Edge and Christian. Undertaker Show versus X-Pac Kane was excellent as well as Shane Test. Downside was Rock and Mr. Ass. Really piss-poor match that ended Gunn's push as quick as it began. Main event was great and had one great Jesse quote to go with the rest. That's for your old man, you little bastard.
And
there.
And let's say congrats, Stevie.
Yes, congratulations.
Yep, there's your feedback. Yes, very early. All right, let's wrap up, Scott. We'll be back next week, Monday night, with Unforgiven 99. And next Wednesday, we'll have a little potpourri jamboree. We'll talk about the new website that launches in early June, as well as just kind of bullshit about wrestling in general with Chad and Brad. And that's it. We'll be back then. Hope you guys enjoyed the content this week. A little trip through August of 99.
Yes.
Anything you want to add?
Very exciting. That was a big, great show. And now we get into the first example of the fall. The doldrums. Or maybe. No. We'll see. Looking forward to next week.
Indeed. So, for Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. Everyone have a great holiday weekend. We'll be back here on Memorial Day night talking Unforgiven. You'll be Unforgiven.
Brad and Chad, the happy combo.
Indiana, Miami, tied 99-99, 24 seconds left.
Well, we can't do what we did on Monday night. Or else the ending will be 3 hours long.
I know. Bad. Well, I'll see how this Miami does in this possession here.
Go Pacers.
Well, Miami's got the ball. LeBron's got the ball. He's got another triple-double tonight. And he drives and makes the basket. So they're up two with 10 seconds left. And that's where we're going to leave you because we're taking a timeout. So, that's it. We're out.
Hey,
suck a bitch. Wait, wrong guy. But said he talking shit in the whole tank. First you wanna step to me.
Now your ass screaming for the deputy. They sing you to Charlie Baker, Denver, bro. Now they running up in your slope. Your car used to be the Don Juan. Now your name is just Twan. Switching, snapping, rolling your wise and neck. You better run a check. So take a check yourself before you wreck yourself. Check yourself before you biggity wreck yourself. So take a check yourself before you wreck yourself. Cause big dicks up your ass is bad for your health. You better run a make on that license plate. You could have had a V8 instead of a Trey 8 slug to the cranium. I got six and I'm aiming them. Will I shoot or keep you guessing? Cause fuck you when that shit just stressing. Bitch, get off the wood, you're no good. There goes the neighborhood hook. Slut. Go ahead and keep your drawers. Giving up the clapping. Who needs applause at a time like this? Pop the coochie in your debt. The bitch is a Miami hurricane head. Drunk, niggas call her lips and lungs.
Check yourself, Q. Yeah. Check yourself, Q.